Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Viewpoints on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, good morning to you. Great to be back on air. I know it has been a couple of weeks since our last conversation, though as always, much has happened in just a short period of time. Now, while global stocks have been making new all-time highs, as you have predicted in one of our recent conversations, some experts are questioning if this rally really has legs. So I'm curious, Burkhard, as to what you make of this. Can investors expect markets to rise further from here?
Thank you, Dan. Great to be back. And yes, absolutely. I think many markets will rise to new all-time highs over the next year and even this year. You know, global markets are really living up to some of our major investment theses this year. Let me just pick three of them by way of example. So we've been talking about the U.S. resilience. We've been talking about the great rotation. And we also mentioned the case for gold, which is one of our really long-standing investment theses. Let me just spend a few thoughts on them. So we've consistently stressed the resilience of the U.S. economy. It just has this amazing flexibility, this innovation and wealth, especially the baby boomers. And we've always seen U.S. consumers as a peak pillar to the economy and thus to the stock market, both baby boomers, but also to those who take advantage of a very strong labor market, which we see continuing. And add to that the global reach of U.S. business, and it still has a long way to go. And then another big thesis this year that we've been discussing several times has been the great global rotation. This year, so far, 8 out of 10 of the top stock markets are from Europe and 2 are from Africa. Regionally speaking, LATAM leads the pack. And that's why we've consistently published many ways to invest into Europe, which is really shooting out many lights this year from a market perspective. And clearly the soft dollar is a tailwind for global emerging markets. Plus, the new America First policy really feels like the best disruption that happened to the rest of the world for long, because without relying on exports to the U.S., the rest of the world is finally getting serious about its own competitiveness, infrastructure, and security, things places like Europe should have done for long. And as its currency rises, its inflation and bond yields are sinking. And in combination, that's creating a powerful wave which lifts many boats. And oh, I almost forgot our gold thesis, because we've really been holding that for so very long. You know, the gold rally, in my view, really has much to do with China. It's really about Beijing trying to promote its own digital currency, and it's buying gold to back that up. It's like a new Bretton Woods Accord within its sphere of influence. And, you know, while talk about the de-dollarization, in my view, will go nowhere, we do expect that China will keep buying gold to back up its digital currency and what have you. So in sum, yes, I do believe that this rally still has legs, and we will see more all-time highs this year and next, especially, I believe, in some of our key investment theses.
Well, thank you, Burkhard, for that assessment. That's all great to hear, especially, of course, as summer is approaching and many people are hoping for some peace of mind and holidays in the sun. Speaking of summer, a related concern for investors, that being the rising temperatures we've been seeing, they're costing businesses and governments alike. Weather insurance rates are going up around the world. Agriculture, infrastructure, and power grids are increasingly stressed. Rising sea levels are threatening coastal areas. So, Burkhard, how do you think investors should think about this?
Well, you're so right, of course, Dan. And of course, climate change is nothing new. But in the past, it seemed a distant threat, at least to many markets. And now it's really driving costs and profits, and therefore driving markets too. Think about major cities in Asia like Jakarta, Mumbai, Shanghai, but also Miami or New York. They face much higher property and casualty insurance rates. I traveled to Venice early this year. The seawater was more than a meter above the street level. And here in Switzerland, where I reside, landslides from the Alps have risen tenfold in the last few years compared to history. Look, while there's much more to this story, here are just three simple thoughts I think investors might want to ponder in the context of climate change. Number one, insurance companies actually thrive under climate change. I know that's counterintuitive, but that's because just look at the S&P Property and Casualty Insurance Index. It's up 12% year to date. It's up 22% last 12 months, and it's up 150% last 5 years. And why is that? It's simply because their insurance premia usually rise faster than the payouts. That's why insurance firms actually benefit from this, counterintuitive as it sounds. The second thought to bear in mind in the context of climate change, note that many ESG indices for both stocks and bonds have outperformed traditional indices both this year, last year, and during the last 5 years. So we think ESG criteria are really a solid way to strengthen your portfolio. They reduce risk, they clearly improve return potential, and add to overall portfolio diversification. And a third thing to bear in mind is the energy transition. We discussed this, I think, last time or before that. It's really one of the most powerful global investment themes. You can't underestimate it. It's potentially going to change everything because it'll not only cool the climate, it'll drive growth, profits, and innovation. Because when the cost of electricity declines to zero, as it may well do during the next 20 years, the energy transition truly and fundamentally changes the world. And that's why, just by way of example, Warren Buffett's been invested in EV makers like BYD's for many, many years.
Well, Burkhardt, it's always interesting to revisit these themes when it comes to climate. So thank you for keeping this conversation up front and center with our listeners. Thank you for that. Another investor concern being government debts and bond markets. Now, while the U.S. bond market hasn't balked at the big, beautiful bill, which is still being worked out in Congress as we speak, circumstances do look dramatically different in Japan after its prime minister compared Japan's fiscal deficits to Greece's deficits before the crisis. Japan's 40-year yield hit an all-time high. Now, some worry that Japan's problems could hit other markets too. What's your take on that, Burkhardt?
Sure, I get that. But I think, you know, for one, I think Prime Minister Ishiba's Japan-Greece comparison is just totally flawed. You know, Japan, like the U.S., has the privilege of borrowing in its own currency. Remember that currency which borrow in their own currency can never go bankrupt because they can always print. Greece, by way of contrast, never had that privilege. They, when they ran into a crisis, were borrowing in euros. Second, Japan borrows from its own central bank, 50%, and its domestic pension funds. Again, Greece never had that privilege. Instead, back then, Greece was borrowing mostly from foreign creditors, namely other European countries. So the Greece 2011 crisis is not going to happen in Japan because Japan enjoys privileges, which Greece never had at the time. Instead, if push came to shove, and that may happen, I think there's a real significant probability, the Bank of Japan would probably revert to its old yield curve control. They didn't want that, but that's what sometimes happens in life. And as a side effect, some of today's Japanese bond investors, I suspect, would rather rotate some of their assets out of the JGBs into, guess what, U.S. Treasuries. And that surely can't be a bad thing.
Well, Burkhardt, as always, do appreciate you dropping by the podcast to share your thoughts, insights with our listeners and clients. It's always good to compare notes with you. So for now, I wish you a good rest of the week. And as always, do look forward to our next conversation coming up next week.
Likewise, Dan. It's always a great pleasure. Thanks for having me here, and have a great rest of the day, rest of the week. Speak again next week. Bye now.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.